alcoholic, and my sobriety date, as mentioned, is June 25th, 1984, and for that I'll be forever grateful. And for those day counters, I was counting months. I went to a meeting and they asked for how many months she had, and I raised my hand for 300, but I have 501 months today, and my that's a long time between cold beers. And I absolutely love the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hope you find here what I found, which is a life whole lot better than the one I got here with. And my God, when I was brand new at all these day counters and somebody said they had 41 years, I'd be going, why would anybody want to stay sober that long? And I got to tell you, it has been a life beyond my wildest dreams. And I had a lot of wild dreams. I hope I don't drink too long in this one here. It's a 20-minute talk. I do have a tendency to do that, but I had the same problem when I was out there drinking. So I started off in high school. I was gotten, we had booze around the house. It was not a big deal, but I got invited to my first upper class party, and it was a kegger party. And I ended up going to this kegger party, and they had the keg in the center room, and the guys were on the wall on the left, the girls were on the wall on the right. And so I floated over, got my beer, went back to my wall, and I downed that beer, and I went back to the keg and back to my wall. By the third beer, I was the bartender, and I was pouring one for you and one for me, and I absolutely love the effect produced by alcohol. I don't know about you, but growing up, I was afraid of everything. I was afraid of the talking to girls. I was afraid of the big, tough football players. And by that third beer, I wasn't afraid of nothing. And all of a sudden, I'm chasing around the girls and kissing on them at the party. The big, tough guys were my best friends now. And I was to do that night everything I was going to do for the next 15 years of my drinking. I fell down, I threw up, and I was thrown out. And then I got to practice throwing up on the way home. I started exhibiting some of the signs of alcoholism right off the bat. I had that Irish hollow leg. I could outdrink almost everybody from the get-go. I don't know about you folks, but when I'd be out there having three or four six packs, and my friends have had three or four drinks, and they're staggering around going, "Can you drive?" And I'm grabbing the keys up. What do you mean drive? I can race. I'm ready for the Indianapolis 500. And I'm getting more in control, and they're getting out of control. And I'll give you an example. About time I get sober, I'm sober my first year, and I'm at a Thanksgiving party at my house with my family and my sister and everybody. And first of all, the math was wrong right from the beginning. There's eight people at this table, and they only have two bottles of wine. And about halfway through dinner, nobody's finished their first glass, and I'm getting nervous. And I reach over and I grab a bottle. My sister was about halfway through with her glass. I said, "Would you like some more wine?" And she's like, "No, thanks. I'm starting to feel it." And I'm going, "That's the point." And she said, "I don't like that sense of losing control." And my God, if you're like me, that's the only time I felt in control in my life. And so I started drinking a little bit. I could outdrink everybody. I went up to college. I transferred a couple times, ended up at USC in my junior year, and they had the fraternity rush parties, and they had the kegger parties out there. And literally, they had chugging contests up and down the row. And I could out, literally, I'm in these contests, and I'm out drinking the front line of the USC football team. And back then, I was 150 pounds soaking wet. And these guys are like 220 and whatever else. They went on to play pro football. And I don't know about you, but I started going into different classes. And that was one of the first signs of alcoholism, is the fact that I could consume mass quantities of alcohol and maintain, as they would say. But another thing is one of the other thing that alcohol does for people, and it's the only thing it really does improve, is your ability to rationalize and justify things. But it also gives you an opinion. And I started spending a lot more time in class, I mean, out of class, partying than in class. And I decided I didn't like this professor and dropped out of his class. And then finally, I was in my senior year, and I'm walking up this class, and I open the door, and it's that professor that I dropped out of his class this semester. And I didn't like him back then, and I certainly didn't like him in the moment. So I turned around and walked away from school, less than six classes to graduate. And my folks were pissed. And people were saying to me back then, this is 1976, and people were saying stuff like, "See the world, join the Navy." And I said, "Not locked up on a boat with a bunch of guys for 6 months. I don't think so." And what happened was I was dating a few gals and they were flight attendants in the airline. They said, "Tom, why don't you be a flight attendant? You would have a lot of fun." And folks, this is back in, like I said, in the good old days. This is 1976, Donna Summers, the Bee Gees, Last Chance for Romance, and you're looking at one of the original Disco Ducks. And it was fun, and the party was on. And I did have a lot of fun. I got hired by I interviewed with several airlines, and the only smart one was actually was Western. They didn't want anything to do with me, but I got picked up by a couple of other ones. But I ended up going to work with TWA, that stood for Trans World Airlines, and it was off to Kansas City for training, and then I was dropped in New York. And this is back when the tall ships were coming in. It was a bicentennial year, and it was a magical time, and things were working, and it was a lot of fun. And like I said, it was the good old days. Back then, sex was safe, and marijuana and cocaine were non-habit forming, and my how time changed. And I was getting paid to hop on this aircraft and flirt as much as possible, hand out a few cocktails, and then dance the night away. And like I said, at that time, it was the beginning and it was a magical time. Now, you're going to hear a quote around Alcoholics Anonymous. These people are going to say, "My worst day sober is better than my best day drinking." Well, those folks didn't drink with me. Let me tell you, the quote is supposed to say, "My worst day sober, I wouldn't trade my worst day sober for my best day drinking." And that is a fact. And so anyway, long story short, I've had this thing. I've got this immense capacity to drink it. But the problem is I had something unbeknownst to me, which was alcoholism. And it's progressive and terminal. And so the good times started getting shorter, the problems got longer. And the problems is like in the airlines, you know, if you go out and party, like today I'm in construction. If you go out and party your brains out in construction, you show up to work the next day, you overshoot the mark, you come in late, the boss is going to yell at you. See, they either get to work. If you do it too many times, he just doesn't invite you back anymore. But in the airlines, it's different. You go out, you party your brains out, you show up to work the next morning, and your job is gone. You know, and you're stuck in places like Dayton, Ohio. No offense to anybody there. But then now you got to get out of there and you got to explain things, you know. And so it was kind of hectic. And so all the alcoholics kind of huddled together, and I started bidding flights that didn't leave early in the morning. I liked those afternoon flights, you know, and preferably the red eyes at night because I resembled that remark, and I could always wake up for those. But so I was working a lot of these flights and stuff, and things are going along. And you kind of huddle up, and you kind of alcoholics are like water. We seek our own level, and you know what happens is, you know. When you're in high school and you fall down, you throw up and you're thrown out and stuff, that might be funny when you're 16 or whatever. But when you're 23 and 25, it's not funny anymore, especially if somebody just bought a brand new house and you're throwing up all over their rug. But alcoholics tend to seek each other, and you end up out drinking a lot of these friends. So the people you hang around with are just like you, you know, and so it's no wonder your way of life is seems like the only normal one because you haven't been hanging around normal people. You know, I remember going off and doing this, and we were I end up having my first introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was having trouble I was showing up late and this, that, and the other, and one of the supervisors talked to me about it, and so I got called into the office about drinking, and because I kind of smelled like a brewery when I showed up, and I said, "Well, you know," I filled out the 20 questions, and I think if you get three right, you're definitely an alcoholic. I was like somewhere around 17 of them right, you know, and I said, "You're crazy. I'm not an alcoholic. Didn't you read these answers?" And anyway, long story short, they said, "Well, there's a test, and the test is you go you drink two or three drinks every single day." And I go, "But I don't drink every day." They go, "Oh, we'll try." And I said, "Oh, okay." And but the catch was that you had to have them every day and just that many. And they said, "Well, what's your drink of choice?" I said, "Well, I like beer." So anyway, I start off on this test, and about 2 weeks into it, I've been having only three drinks every single day. And I said, "Oh, well, my gosh, this must be okay." What I realized that after about 3 weeks, I forgot to ask a really a strategic question when I left that thing. I forgot to ask them how long they wanted me to do this. And so I finally get the gal on the phone and I said, "By the way, I forgot to ask, how long did you want me to do this test?" And they said, "A year." And I was absolutely floored. I mean, who would want it, you know? And anyway, so I went along about another week and a half, and then I had a major crisis. Somebody won an election or something, and my candidate lost, and so I went into a blackout. And obviously, I had a problem, so I ended up going to a treatment center, and that was nice, and everything was wonderful, and I did that. But see, I'm a real alcoholic. I'm not one of those alcoholic Andes. And what that meant to me is that I could continue to smoke pot and snort cocaine, but only on special occasions like Tuesday. And they didn't think that was too funny. And you know, there's old timers in the meeting going, "Nothing from the neck up, please." And I'm like, you know, it's a nice suggestion. And anyway, so eventually they start. You know, if you snort a couple lines, you go to an AA meeting and they ask for that burning desire, your hand goes up. I want to tell them how wonderful the sobriety is, and you're going, "Oh, you know." And so they stopped calling on me, so I stopped going. And then I had another major crisis. I got stood up on a date, and I had the three drinks, and I'm patting myself on the back, going, "Aha, had a nice, wonderful evening." And I'm thinking, "Aha, now you know." See, I had all this self-knowledge now because I learned all that stuff in AA. I said, "You know, my case was different. See, my case was a little bit different. Therefore, everything you said didn't apply. And besides, you know, I wasn't as bad as some of you. See, I hadn't lost that job, and I hadn't lost a wife, and I never lost a house, and of course, I never had a house and never had a wife, but that was beside the point." And I end up spending the next 3 years of sheer hell fulfilling chapter three in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, unbeknownst to me, because first of all, I never read the book. I didn't have a sponsor, and it's really tough to work any steps if you don't do that. So I come crawling back into the rooms about a year later, and about 3 years later, I should say, and I end up going one more time into another tune-up center, care unit out here, and I end up coming in there. And it's not that I wanted what you had in AA; it's that I didn't want what I had any longer. I knew I was destined for something in life, but I was absolutely devastated. You know, the emptiness and loneliness inside that the book talks about—that only a few know—that was me. I'd be in a room of 1,000 people and still be all alone. That last few months of drinking and whatever, I can tell you that every time I showed up for work in the last couple of years, they seemed to be short liquor or money. So I got the job who pours coffee in first, I mean, a job as a service manager who does all the inventory work. The only problem is I couldn't bid those afternoon and evening flights anymore. I had to get on, they had me on these, early morning flights, and the service manager had to pour coffee up in first class with them China cups in that silver tray, and they'd be vibrating. I'd be, "Would you like some more coffee?" And they're going, "Yes, please," over the aisle here. And it's like, what's shaking more, me or the plane? And we were still parked at the gate, you know. And not like some of you folks, I end up getting sober on a New Year's resolution. And as I told you, my sobriety date's June 25th. I was getting around to it now. And I remember I was going to meetings and I was hitting these meetings and one more time, you know, finally I was, for some reason, I was able to get Tuesday night off for a while, and I was at this one for a regular for almost 3 months, and the secretary goes, "Do you have a home group?" And I said, "No." And they said, "Would you like this to be your home group?" I said, "Sure, that'd be nice." And she said, "When's your sobriety date?" And I said, "Today." And she put down that pen and picked up a pencil and wrote my sobriety date in there, you know, kind of lightly too, because that wasn't my sobriety date. But I can tell you this, that I knew exactly what was going on at that point. And one more time, I ended up into the care unit, and all I wanted to do was go to the meetings. And like I said, it's not what they had in here; it's that I didn't want what I had any longer. And I remember that counselor when I was in treatment, looking around the room, saying, "You know, 90% of you folks, and there's about 30 of us there's only about three of you here that are going to stay sober. The rest of you are going to drink again." And I looked around that room, and humble as I could, I said, I felt really sorry for the rest of them, because I knew what it was going to take, and it was going to take everything. They always say it doesn't take much of a man to stay sober, just all of them. And I put this number one in my life, and I started going to meetings, and I got a sponsor. And I started doing this stuff, and I started doing the steps through attrition. And when I say that, I mean this, is that I got in there and all of a sudden I was with some of the people I got out of the care unit with had drank, and I talked to them on the phone, and they said, I said, well, did you get a sponsor? And they said, no. And so I got my sponsor. And then they said, then I asked another one, did you get a sponsor? He said, yeah, I got a sponsor. And they said, did you ever call him? And he said, no. And so I called mine. And then I started doing the steps. I took step one. I really feel that I lived the first two steps out there, you know, that I did that. And I remember I was having a problem with this God thing, you know, and I went to my sponsor and I said, you know, I'm really having a problem with this God part here. He goes, it's all a God part. What are you talking about? That the God part. And I said, well, you know, I'm really having a major problem with this God thing. And he goes, you think you're having a problem with God? You should see the problem he's having with you. And he walked away. And I'm like, you know. And so, you know, the book says this. It says, if a man believes or is willing to believe, we emphatically reassure him he's well on his way. And I was. And I don't know about you folks, but back then I'm into science fiction. So I rented this is called a VCR and a beta. I ended up renting the VCR thing at a place called Blockbusters, and it's they rented films, you know. And so I watch it. I grab the Star Wars one, and I'm out there, and I'm watching it at home, and it's me and Luke, and we're going after the Battlestar, shooting them up. And it said, "Let go, Luke, and use the Force." And I said, "My God, that's his program." And today, I believe there's the positive and negative forces acting in this universe, and you have a choice what you want to plug into on a daily basis. The positive side is the loving and caring for other human beings and putting the needs of another ahead of your own. And the dark side of the force is the selfishness, self-centered, and looking out for number one, and when's my ship coming in? And I fully believe that it all rests in that loving and caring of other people. And if you put the key in that and unlock that key, that's what's going to unlock the keys of the kingdom around here. You know, I was about 2 years sober and end up, I could go into relationships and tell you about another hour talk on that, but I'm just going to go to the basics here of the program here. When I was 2 years sober, I got a new sponsor. I'd moved to California, and I was out there in Southern Cal, and I got a commitment sponsor. And a commitment sponsor is someone who runs around and volunteers you for everything that opens up in Alcoholics Anonymous. And next thing you know, I'm a secretary of this one. I'm the coffee guy over here. I'm the greeter at that one. And I'm cleanup guy on this one. And he also put me on the board of directors over at this halfway house where they needed a carpenter at that time. I'd changed careers and a few other things since then. You know, what happened to me was I had a bad week in sobriety about 2.5 years. On Monday, I lost the job I'd had for 10 years. On Wednesday, I got a letter from the IRS on $2,800, and on Friday the girl I was living with threw me out, and I'm feeling my heart, and I'm thinking about drinking, and I'm thinking real hard, and no matter how much I drank, you knew they weren't going to call that strike off at TWA, and no matter how blitzed I got, you know the IRS wasn't going to call me up and say, hey Tom, don't worry about it, we have lots of people that owe us money, and I think it's 2 minutes here. And he goes, so just don't do that no more. You know that wasn't going to happen. And we already proved that she didn't like me when I was drinking. So all of a sudden my brain went click, and no longer was drinking a solution to any of my problems. So I just focused in and threw myself harder into this program. I ended up changing careers then at the age of 32. I ended up becoming a carpenter, and today that's a career I'm still in. And I moved up the ranks of carpenter to superintendent, and I'm still working. I'm 71 years old, and I ain't gonna quit. They go, when are you retiring? I said, probably lunchtime on the day of my funeral, and because I like working and it's productive and everything. And I'll tell you a quick little two stories here. Well, I'll just finish it with this one because I love you guys and don't want to bore you. And so one of my commitment sponsors commits me to this thing called the Warm Springs. We had friends. It was an H&I commitment. And I'm tooling along California, and I hop on this thing, you know, and I'm driving along in my pickup, and I'm cruising along about 10, 15 miles over the speed limit. And an ad came on for this new ride they put in at Magic Mountain. And the ad went like this: Ninja, the black belt of roller coasters. You can't see the track. You don't know when the next turn's coming. You never know when they'll throw a loop in there. And I said, my God, that's his program. You hop on this thing called sobriety, and it's going uphill. And all of a sudden, she sits down. You go, my God, what a spiritual program indeed. I love sobriety. And some old timer behind you taps you on and says, hey, buddy, read the book. You go, shut up back there. I got a good program. Check it out. And all of a sudden, he goes, and it's going downhill faster and faster. And you're going, what's going on here? He goes, read the book. You go, I think I lost it on the the last turn, but hang in there, folks, because the line got longer and the price of the ticket went up. Let me tell you about that last job when I lost all that stuff. That was absolutely the best week of my life. So much for me knowing what's going on, right? Because now I've been in a relationship and married. Coming up this Saturday, I'll be married 38 years to the same woman. I've been in a job career that has taken me all over the world. I've been able to go to Australia. I've been able to go. I'm going. Matter of fact, we're going to Australia in about another 2 weeks. But I've been in the Saudi Arabia, down in Trinidad, all over the U.S. And if you keep coming back, you never know what God has in store for you. But I'll tell you what, it's a whole lot better than what you got here with. Thanks for letting me share.